He was last in a line of nine.
The work goes on, the cause endures, the hope still lives, and the dream shall never die.
77-year-old Senator Edward Kennedy's many dreams survive him, but his death overnight after a year-long battle with brain cancer marks the end of an extraordinary career in the U.S. Senate, the end of a lifetime of public service, and the last farewell from a generation of leaders brought into the world by Joseph and Rose Kennedy. Embodying both the flaws and the triumphs of the Kennedy dynasty, in the end, young Teddy Kennedy was the longest serving. Saying goodbye to the Kennedy we perhaps all knew best on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. A somber morning, but much to talk about. Wednesday, August 26th. I'm John Huckenberry here with Femi Okeh. Good morning, Femi.
Good morning. You made me sad at the very top of the program, but a lot of great things to talk about.
You recognize that music, don't you?
I do. All Apparel at the Sea. It's like a sailor's
Eternal Father. Anthem. It's the Navy's hymn, the sailor's hymn, called, and it was played at JFK's funeral.
Oh, okay. Yes. I'm wiping away the tears now.
All morning long, along with the day's news, we're remembering the complex and, in the end, towering legacy and public service of Edward M. Kennedy, who just a year ago yesterday spoke these words at the Democratic National Convention in Denver.
As I look ahead, I am strengthened by family and friendship. So many of you have been with me in the happiest days and the hardest days. Together, we have known success and seen setbacks, victory and defeat. But we have never lost our belief that we are all called to a better country and a newer world.
That was only Ted Kennedy's second public appearance after being diagnosed with brain cancer. It was one of the emotional high points of that Denver convention. Joining us now, columnist for the Boston Globe, Kevin Cullen. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, John.
A lot of thoughts, a lot of emotions there up in Boston and in Hyannisport, of course, where the Kennedy home is. And what are your thoughts at this point?
I guess the overwhelming emotion is, what a life. A hell of a life. It's funny because about 2 years ago, the Globe gave me about 6 months to just go through Rose Kennedy's papers, which were then installed at the Kennedy Library right across the street from where the Boston Globe offices are. And I was just so struck by reading about young Ted Kennedy and how he was sort of he was the baby of the family. And that was a family where you really had to fight to get a word in edgewise. The hell with getting the food at the end of the table. There were a lot of strong personalities in there, including the women.
And Teddy certainly held his own. Kevin Cullen, longtime columnist for the Boston Globe, stay with us. Ted Kennedy, of course, passing away at age 77. Femi, okay, we have some strong personalities in our audience as well, don't we?
We do, and some people on our website at thetakeaway.org, they are actually criticizing Senator Kennedy, as well as complimenting him. You can do that as well. Tell us your memories about Ted Kennedy. He passed away last night, of course, 877-8-MY-TAKE, or email us, mytake@thetakeaway.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
And I pledge to you, that I will be there next January on the floor of the United States Senate when we begin the great battle.
And Edward M. Kennedy fulfilled that pledge, him speaking a year and a day from the day of his death at age 77 after a year-long battle with brain cancer. Speaking at the Democratic National Convention, the convention that nominated Barack Obama as the nominee for president. President Obama says this morning that he and Michelle are heartbroken. Quote, an important chapter in our history has come to an end. Our country has lost a great leader. We're going to have remembrances of Edward M. Kennedy all morning here on The Takeaway, as well as the reaction that's coming in from all quarters, from members of the Kennedy family, as well as lawmakers, people in Washington, leaders from around the world. Continuing now with Kevin Cullen, columnist for the Boston Globe, and also joining us is Carl Hulse, chief congressional correspondent for the New York Times in Washington. Good morning, Carl and Kevin.
Good morning. Good morning.
So, Kevin, continue with what you were saying. I mean, here was what a life, Kevin Cullen. Teddy had, and he had to fight because he was the youngest of nine.
Yeah, and you had the Kennedy table, the dinner table was sort of like this debating society, and really everybody had to get involved. But use the term, and it almost sounds hackneyed, but the term public service, I think it's something that was instilled in these kids from the moment they really could sit at the dinner table. And, you know, Eunice, I think, was kind of the consummate person in that regard, because Eunice was never elected to an office, and yet the way she brought disabled people and people with disabilities to the table, you know, she had a profound effect on human beings' lives. And I think Teddy is just the, you know, you bring that up to an elected official and somebody that served, you know, in public office. I think of you know, mentally retarded people. I think of people with mental disabilities who will now, because of him and his great pal Pete Domenici, a Republican, got through that bill that made, you know, a parity act between that made mental illness the same as a physical illness when it came to you approaching your insurance company. Those are the kind of things. And I mentioned Pete Domenici because there's nobody in the Senate who has such a bipartisan record. When I think of senators, you know, in my lifetime, the two names that come to my mind all the time are like Ted Kennedy and then Jesse Helms. Now, I always knew what Jesse Helms was against, but I wasn't quite so sure what he was for. You always knew what Ted Kennedy was for. And nobody, I don't think anybody will, it's almost like talking about when, you know, when some great baseball player retires, nobody will beat DiMaggio's consecutive hit streak. Nobody
well, he's only two senators nobody. Have served longer than Ted Kennedy in the Senate. So, I mean, his legacy in the Senate is secure. You said a moment ago, Kevin Cullen, that everybody knew what Ted Kennedy was for. I mean, probably supreme among those things Kennedy was for was this. Here he is speaking back in 1996.
Families deserve the security and peace of mind of knowing two important things: that their insurance will not be canceled when they are sick and need it most, and that they will not lose their coverage or face new exclusions for pre-existing conditions because they change their job or lose their job.
Talking with Kevin Cullen, columnist for the Boston Globe, and also Carl Hulse, chief congressional correspondent for the New York Times. Carl, you know, Ted Kennedy believed from the beginning of his advocacy of health care reform in the United States to his dying day that every American deserved essentially government-subsidized health care. He never wavered in that, right?
Right, and it'll be very interesting right now to see if his passing influences the debate, obviously. Because no one, it's been very partisan this summer, obviously, you know, terribly overheated, and everyone talking about how Ted Kennedy's absence is being felt. So it'll be interesting now to see if his death changes the dynamic here. I mean, people have been waiting for someone to step up and say, listen, we have to stop the partisanship, talk about this logically. And now perhaps, you know, that will be his final influence. I don't know.
Carl, this is Femi OK here. I'm just reading that President Obama said that he thanked Edward Kennedy for his wise counsel in the Senate. How much was he doing behind the scenes while he was sick?
Well, he was talking to Chris Dodd regularly, other members, the president, Harry Reid. So he was playing a role, but everyone, of course, has been talking about how the fact that he was gone was leaving creating a vacuum, and no one was stepping up to fill it at this point, leaving the members of the Senate to fight. So he was playing a role. It wasn't the role he normally would have played. Everyone was saying, wow, if Ted Kennedy was here, things might be different. So...
Well, it's interesting. He even suggested that the rules be changed for reappointment, anticipating his early death, that the governor of Massachusetts appoint a new senator so that there would be two votes for health care reform, according to Kennedy, and that his would essentially be there, at least virtually. So, Kevin Cullen, you know, if we're talking about health care, there's that legislative legacy. There's also civil rights. You mentioned rights for the disabled. It's also the case that Teddy Kennedy made lots of headlines during the summer. There was the campaign in 1980, the ill-fated campaign in 1980. And then, of course, this very, very famous headline that Teddy Kennedy made in July of 1969.
This morning I entered a plea of guilty to the charge of leaving the scene of an accident. This last week has been an agonizing one for me and for the members of my family. And the grief we feel over the loss of a wonderful friend will remain with us the rest of our lives.
Now, the Chappaquiddick incident, Kevin Cullen, it dogged Teddy Kennedy for much of his Senate career, but then it seemed to go away. When did that change?
Well, I think, obviously, Chappaquiddick killed more than Mary Jo Kopechne. I think it really killed any chance that Teddy would be elected president. But I think the other thing is, there was a period after that that I think Teddy engaged in what he even acknowledged was questionable personal behavior. There's too much drinking. There's too much carousing. But there came a time, and I don't think it's coincidental. I think it's when Vicky came into his life that he settled down, and then he got back to doing what he did best.
That's his second wife, Vicky, right?
Yeah, Vicky, yep. And that's create laws and make laws. The other legacy that we're talking about, Ted Kennedy. And I think, and Carl can talk to this more than me, because I'm not really a Washington guy, even though I've worked there over the years sporadically. Teddy Kennedy had the best effective staff over a period of 30-odd years that you could name. Some of the best people in Washington went through that office. And why they went through that office, young kids that came up on the Hill, they wanted to work there. It's like a kid wants to work, play for the Yankees instead of playing for the Houston Astros.
Is that true, Carl?
Things done.
Yeah, it's interesting he could get DiMaggio and the Yankees into a Teddy Kennedy.
I'm from Boston. What can I say?
Right, you're going to get in trouble all day for that, Kevin. But is that true? Was that a plum staff?
That is true. He actually is known for his staff. I mean, over the years, there was talk, you know, that they actually supplemented the salaries of the staff. When the convention was in Boston back when Kerry was nominated, one of the things that I found most interesting was that, and I did a story on Kennedy at that time, and it was sort of the presidential nominating convention that he never had, was that people talked about how Teddy Kennedy ultimately had a bigger influence than either of his brothers when they ran for president, because he stayed in the Senate for so long and served as a legislator. So I think that is true. And, you know, in some ways, Chappaquiddick did prevent him from being in the White House, but it also led to him having a greater influence legislatively.
Well, it's a complicated legacy. I mean, you've got the Kennedys were supposed to be president, right? Joe was supposed to be president, then JFK was president. He was assassinated. RFK was going to be president. So, in a sense, there was always this concern that being a senator wasn't enough for Teddy, but in the end, it's probably a bigger legacy even than JFK in real terms. Kevin?
I think it enough for his father. I don't know if it was not enough for Ted. I think Ted made peace with that quite a while ago, probably after the 1980 run. But I think that's absolutely true what Carl says. I think that it's he could have run for president. Hey, let's say maybe he gets two terms in there. That's 8 years. There's no way he could have matched the legislative record that he, you know, that
right.
There's no way he would have
right.
got those laws through if he was president. The way, and that's the interesting thing about, I always come back to, whenever I've talked about Teddy publicly over the years, I usually get attacked by, I guess the only way to describe them are people who never got over Chappaquiddick. And my response to that is, neither did he.
Well, we're going to take a stab at getting over Chappaquiddick this morning. Perhaps most of America will as well. Ted Kennedy died overnight at the age of 77 from a year-long battle with brain cancer. Thank you, Kevin Cullen, columnist for the Boston Globe. Also, Carl Hulse, chief congressional correspondent for the New York Times. A complicated legacy. The death of Ted Kennedy continues in a moment.
You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everyone. John Hockenberry here with Femi Okay. Of course, the top story this morning, Ted Kennedy passed last night. He died after a year-long battle with brain cancer at age 77, and he dies with his legacy as a legislator secure, certainly.
Right.
A biography full of both the triumphs and the flaws of being a Kennedy,
of course,
in America. And it's fair to say that many of his dreams for what America could be probably unrealized at the moment of his death. Harris Wofford joins us now, former Pennsylvania senator, joins us from Washington, D.C. Harris Wofford, thanks for being a part of the program.
Looking forward to talking with you.
Now, you knew Ted Kennedy. You must have known Ted Kennedy on the original JFK run for the presidency back in 1960, right?
Well, yes, and right afterwards, the first talk I had with him occurred because he popped into the talent hunt where I was helping Sergeant Shriver and said, Sarge asked me to get advice from you whether I should go to Africa. And I said, oh, so I'd like to go. I've never been. How would you go? And he said, the House Foreign Affairs Africa Committee invited me to go with them. I said, oh, what a great opportunity. When do they leave? He said, they left yesterday. And if you think it's a good idea to go to Africa and Sarge, I'm going to try to go tonight. That was my first real encounter with him. And the transformation of Ted Kennedy from that young man through the tragedies and travails and then the defeat of his own ultimately misbegotten presidential campaign, where I supported him and my wife ran as a Carter delegate and I as a Kennedy delegate.
Wow.
From 1980 on, I think, is the most extraordinary transformation of a person from a good political, warm, undistinguished in some sense, into one of the great men of our time. And everyone is agreeing he's the greatest senator of these decades.
You know, there are two transformations here. There's the transformation from the young Ted Kennedy kicking around with his older brothers to the senator Kennedy, who you actually collaborated with in the Senate when you were a senator from Pennsylvania, and then this bigger transformation that took place after 1980 when he realized the presidency wasn't going to be his. What would you say legislatively? We've talked a lot about health care this morning. What would you say his legacy is regarding the mission to achieve civil rights in the United States?
Well, civil rights and national service were always of great interest to him, along with universal health care. Civil rights, of course, the tumultuous time in civil rights was as he was coming of age in the Senate, and he was a stalwart supporter of civil rights when I was aide to Kennedy, President Kennedy, on civil rights. But and he picked up the torch that Robert Kennedy so passionately had by the time he died for full civil rights for all, and has extended it over time to women and to gays and to the whole realm of discrimination in our society. I think he became a great champion of that. And the other part of it that I even was much closer over the years involved with him was the biggest champion of large scale, if not universal, opportunities for citizen service, national service, Peace Corps, AmeriCorps, was Ted Kennedy in all these last years.
Well, let's bring in Tricia Rose, who's a professor and chair of Africana Studies at Brown University. We think of the civil rights movement as led by African-American leaders, of course, the Kennedys being visionaries in some sense, LBJ being the big deal maker who actually brought the Civil Rights Act into fruition. Where does Teddy Kennedy fit into this legacy from your perspective as a historian, Tricia?
Well, it's an honor to be on the radio with Harris Wofford, so I'm grateful to be here. I must say that it's very important that we recognize the significance of legislators and political figures like Ted Kennedy in creating legal structures that are sustainable to make real the kinds of social activism that many groups work on the ground to produce. So his early support of the Voting Rights Act and the Fair Housing Laws in 1968, and even more importantly, his fighting Reagan's attempts to weaken the Voting Rights Act in 1982, is critically important. That kind of leadership is not just about supporting certain historical moments, but maintaining the momentum and refusing to go backwards. I mean, there's really quite a struggle over these issues. We think they're over, but they're really not. And people of his character and his investment nationally and internationally are extremely important for creating legal structures of equality and opportunity and then working hard to maintain them fighting against the tide, to return to eras when such legal structures were impossible to maintain.
Tricia Rose, this is Femi Okeh here. I remember Senator Kennedy speaking at the Democratic National Convention in Denver. That moment for African American history, is that significant? How significant is it?
Well, you know, I think, I mean, obviously the entire moment is significant for everyone. And I don't think there really is any African American history without understanding this very important dynamic and alliances where people like Ted Kennedy and the Kennedys as a whole chose to use their privilege, you know, on the sides for social justice and good. And that's not a guarantee. People simply don't need to do that, right? I mean, it's certainly not an automatic
choice. Certainly Kennedys don't need to do that, yeah.
Yeah, so that's really important that this is about a commitment. And in that historical moment, for him to say this is the next generation and, you know, this is the kind of leadership we need, and sort of race matters, right? But it's not the only reason. So it wasn't just about a platitude. It was about saying this is a visionary individual who can move us forward in the ways we need to move forward, and I'm going to support it. And I think that's an extraordinary gesture and a commitment, which is really the key here. It's long-term commitment. It was really quite a long career of commitment to not just civil rights, but to equality and justice, hiring people of color on a regular basis on his staff, you know, being concerned about global issues, immigration, you know, women's issues, gay and lesbian rights. I mean, it's about a fundamental commitment, which is what makes him such a legend.
Well, Professor Rose, I love that takeaway idea that it's not simply about rhetoric, but it's about creating mechanisms of legal sort of levers that can be pulled mm-hmm. by people who can maintain and advocate for their rights within an infrastructure that actually works for them. Tricia Rose, Professor and Chair of Africana Studies at Brown University, thanks so much.
My
John,
Harris Wofford, a final thought for us?
Final thought is that we owe it to him to pay attention to the mechanisms he was working for and the causes of his last 2 years. First was Barack Obama's election. He was passionately involved in it. And secondly, he said the two bills he wanted to see through while he was alive and able to do it was the large-scale Serve America Act that was named for him, the Edward M. Kennedy bill, after huge bipartisan and tumultuous excitement in the Senate and then the bill signing. It took the little domestic Peace Corps of VISTA
right.
that Robert Kennedy and Shriver started.
Sure, and the other one is health care, right?
People.
And the other one is health care.
Universal health care.
Exactly. Harris Wofford, former Pennsylvania senator who knew Ted Kennedy in the JFK for President campaign and was a colleague of his in the Senate. Thank you, Harris.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
Good morning. Femi Okeh and John Hockenberry with you this morning, a morning when we're looking at the life and achievements of Senator Ted Kennedy. We'd also like to hear from you as well. 1-877-8-MY-TAKE for your calls. For your emails, go to mytake@thetakeaway.org.
Positive and negative. I mean, this was a complicated man, a complicated legacy. As Kevin Cullen was saying, he had to fight his way through a family of nine, and he was the low man on the totem pole. We had Rose Kennedy earlier talking about how her friend said she was crazy for having a ninth child, that it would ruin her figure. And sadly, she says, and now Teddy's the only son I have. So she was so happy that she went ahead and had that ninth child. Chris Lydon joins us now, former host of NPR's program The Connection, also the program Open Source. Ran for mayor of Boston in the early 90s, anchor on WGBH television. Chris Lydon, great to talk to you again.
John, it's a pleasure. I mean, under the dreadful circumstances, but thank you.
Well, dreadful in the sense that it's sad that anyone should pass.
We've dreaded it, yeah.
It's not a surprise. I mean, I think if anyone could have handled this well, it's Senator Edward Kennedy. I think this death certainly comes with greater dignity than his other brothers.
Yeah, you know, John, I'm thinking of a song out of the Black Church, which struck me a few years ago. It just caught Ted Kennedy almost too well. I don't know if you know it, but it goes, we fall down, we get up. We fall down, we get up. We fall down, we get up. For a saint is just a sinner who fell down and got up. And that son of a gun kept getting up in an amazingly long and painful lifetime, really. Unspeakable losses and terrible blunders of his own. I mean, you think cheating in college, toying with the life of Mary Jo Kopechne, or or just the fact, I mean, imagine it if it were in your family. Oldest brother dead in a warplane, two political partner brothers assassinated, himself nearly killed, and never again out of a back brace and terrible pain in a plane crash 45 years ago. And the guy kept picking himself up and getting better.
Well,
here, all the complicated jobs he had.
Here's the insight I want from you, Chris Lydon. And that is, you know, we all began our sort of familiarity with Ted Kennedy thinking, okay, well, he's certainly no Jack. He's certainly no Bobby. Is being a senator.
Triplets, they said. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Is being a senator kind of sloppy seconds for this poor young Edward Kennedy? When did it become more than sloppy seconds? When did being a senator become a way of making greater change than even his older brothers?
There had to be. I mean, the 60s was such a frightful time for him. I mean, seriously, that a mind and body could go through those losses. But there must have been many stealing moments in which he said, you know, almost Hemingway-esque, a man can be destroyed but not defeated. A man can be defeated but not destroyed. I am going to come back as somebody, not exactly triumphant, but somebody noble, somebody grand. And he did it. I mean, his career was, I remember his first campaign. It was an embarrassment. He can do more for Massachusetts was the slogan, because his brother's the president of the United States. Well, big deal. He was presumptuous. It was almost insulting that he threw himself at the Massachusetts electorate. And yet, after all the setbacks, after all the discoveries about his own flaws, he had to have made a very conscious process of digging in. There were all those stands on civil rights, especially on Robert Bork, especially where he may have gone over the top rhetorically. It thrills me, John, that he was saying toward the end of his life that his vote against authorizing the Bush war in Iraq was the best vote he ever made.
Wow.
That was 40 years into the job.
That is,
only 5-6 years ago. And this is a man who...
It's a great point.
A model of how we praise God, if we work hard enough and demand enough, how we can grow to the very end.
Flaws and all. Chris, you know, that's a great takeaway that, you know, the shoes that Teddy Kennedy filled after taking his brother's seat, that was pretty huge. But filling Teddy Kennedy's shoes will be even bigger. That's probably as good a testimony for the Kennedy legacy in the Senate as any I've heard this morning. Chris Lydon, former host of NPR's Connection and Open Source. Chris Lydon, of course, a famous journalist in the Boston area who's covered Ted Kennedy for virtually his entire career. Joining us now, New York Times reporter Jeff Zeleny on Martha's Vineyard, where we're expecting Barack Obama to speak live in reaction to the passing of Senator Ted Kennedy. Jeff Zeleny, good morning.
Good morning.
Any sense of the mood there? I mean, this is not unexpected news, but it was certainly not expected this morning.
The mood definitely is one of sadness for President Obama, who was awoken about 2 o'clock this morning to news of Senator Kennedy's passing, and some 20 minutes later he spoke to Vicky Kennedy on the phone. But President Obama really has Senator Kennedy to thank for his rise to the White House, and that's not an overstatement. During a very critical period of the Obama primary campaign with Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, Senator Kennedy really broke from his normal course of action and weighed in a Democratic primary, and President Obama never forgot it. So he owes a lot to him, and I'm sure some of those thoughts will find their way into the eulogy that he is expected to deliver at the funeral service, whenever that is.
Well, Jeff, I know you hate to get into the speculative realm, but some have been talking on the program that the death of Senator Kennedy on an emotional level may you know, have the potential of transforming some of the strident debate within the House and Senate on health care and within the nation at large on the health care debate. But it seems like what you might be saying here is that it may change the president's proclivity to pursue some of the very positions that Ted Kennedy advocated so passionately, which are associated with the Democratic left wing and not so much with Barack Obama. What are your thoughts?
I think there's no question that health care will go forward and may even be, you know, given a name, you know, the the Senator Kennedy Health Reform Act or something like that as a symbolic gesture to a long-time passion of the senators. But I think it's a bit of a overreaction or overstatement to say that the death of Senator Kennedy will dramatically change the confines of the health care debate. Many Republicans, in fact, most Republicans on Capitol Hill, will likely still be opposed to this. You see that in their statements coming out already this morning. One example is Senator Orrin Hatch, a very close friend of Senator Kennedy's, Republican of Utah. He is not likely to support health care reform as it currently stands. So in the short term, it may create somewhat of a rallying cry for Democrats, but I think it's a little premature to suggest that it will change the overall tone of the debate or the president's commitment to this. I think, you know, they have already put almost all of his domestic agenda on the line to get health care reform through Capitol Hill.
But
I don't think it'll change the urgency that much.
In a sense, you can feel Ted Kennedy calling in a political chit. Whether it will happen or not is up to the Congress. Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts passed away at age 77. We're talking with Jeff Zeleny.
I'm Femi Okeh. You're listening to The Takeaway with me and John Hockenberry, of course.
Yes, I'm John Hockenberry here with Jeff Zeleny, reporter for The New York Times on Martha's Vineyard, where we are awaiting live remarks from President Barack Obama on the passing of Senator Edward Kennedy, who died last night after a more than year-long struggle with brain cancer. He died at his home in Hyannisport in Massachusetts. So, Jeff Zeleny, you were talking a moment before that perhaps it's premature to think that anything significant is going to change with the passing of Ted Kennedy on the debate on health care. But strategically, it really is important for the Democrats to pass something, don't you think?
Without question. I think, you know, before Senator Kennedy's passing and after, some type of health care overhaul or reform will be passed by this Democratic House and Senate. President Obama will sign some type of health care legislation into law. And like I said, it will likely have, or it could very well have, the Kennedy name attached to it, which of course will be a symbolic movement. But much to the regret of many senators on Capitol Hill, Mr. Kennedy has not been involved in this health care debate. And they say if he had been able to, it's likely it may look different. It may look a little bit more bipartisan, something that he was able to do. But I think without question, before the end of the year, Mr. Obama will sign in some type of health care reform.
Jeff Zeleny, Femi Okeh here. You mentioned a little earlier that the president was woken up about 2 a.m. this morning. Are you getting any just hints about what he'll be talking about in the next half hour or so?
I think he's definitely going to talk about what Senator Kennedy meant to the United States and the Democratic Party really over the last several decades. Mr. Obama and Mr. Kennedy were separated by an era in Democratic politics. They came of age at a different time. So look for President Obama to praise his action on behalf of civil rights, praise his action on behalf of education and other things. He really feels that Senator Kennedy and his two brothers before him paved the way for his presidency to be possible. So I would expect him to make some of those remarks today.
You mentioned the symbolic importance of having his name attached to a health care reform bill. There's already a bill in the Senate now on national service called the Kennedy Act. You know, sometimes that's a double-edged sword. Nobody remembers the Humphrey Hawkins Full Employment Act that was passed in response to Senator Hubert Humphrey's death. That symbolism sometimes doesn't sustain itself. Is there a worry there?
I think it's different in this sense. The passing of Senator Kennedy really will be remembered and marked as an epic moment in the country's modern political history, much more so than Mr. Humphrey or someone else, I believe. This really is closing the chapter on the Kennedy legacy, and he is so well thought of and revered inside the Democratic Party by liberals and moderates alike. I don't see too much of a double-edged sword in this respect.
All right, so symbolism and substance, possibly the legacy, but we'll have to see what the Democrats can get passed on health care. Jeff Zeleny, reporter for The New York Times, awaiting, as we are, live remarks from President Barack Obama on the death last night of Senator Edward M. Kennedy of Massachusetts.
Listening to The Takeaway from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Thanks for listening in this morning. I'm Femi Okeh with John Hockenberry, and we are covering Ted Kennedy's legacy on The Takeaway all of this morning. Right now, let's take a quick look at some of the morning's other top news stories. A key new economic report is just out, just a couple of minutes ago, in fact. Orders for big-ticket factory goods are up by the largest amount in 2 years. That is good news for manufacturers. So-called durable goods orders jumped 4.9%, and that's better than expected. We're also getting new home sales numbers later today. Overseas, a powerful Iraqi Shiite leader is dead. Abdul Aziz al-Hakim died today while being treated for lung cancer. He was among Iraq's most influential clerics. Back in the United States, an appeals court hears arguments today on Florida's ban on adoptions by gay people. The state is appealing a November ruling declaring the law unconstitutional. And finally, the Postal Service is offering employees $15,000 to leave. The agency has major financial problems. The Postal Service says it could add up to some $500 million in savings. And here on The Takeaway, we are awaiting President Obama to speak about Senator Ted Kennedy. We will bring that to you live when we get it. Those are the stories we're watching today. John.
The president will have his reaction to Senator Kennedy's death. And, of course, we're inviting your reactions at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
Good morning. My name is Percy Stitt, Boston native. Grew up with the legacy of the Kennedys. I just remember this guy as being, the times I met him, as just being a good, normal guy, funny to be around, always remembering names, and more than any regular politician. He was just a genuinely good guy.
And other memories of Senator Ted Kennedy coming in by calling 877-8-MY-TAKE.
He embodied the liberal New England tradition. And everything I love about Boston and Cambridge, that whole area, and worked hard for civil rights and health care. A true activist. God rest his soul. This is Dana from South Wellfleet, Mass.
And even this constitutes legacy.
Troy Cullen from Dakota. I think the most memorable thing about Ted Kennedy is that quintessential New Englander accent. Say chowda.
Tell us at 877-8-MY-TAKE, your view of Senator Ted Kennedy. It's a legacy of lawmaking. It's, of course, the last in the line of the nine Kennedys that Rose and Joe brought into the world, who embodied leaders in so many walks of life here in the United States. You can reach us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or send an email to mytake@thetakeaway.org. As Femi mentioned, President Obama is going to react, we expect, between now and the top of the hour. We'll bring that to you live. But joining us now is Kevin Cullen, columnist for the Boston Globe. What have you hearing this morning as the people awake to this news and begin to react to the remarks that you said on this program? And everyone's having conversations, I imagine, up there in Boston.
Yeah, it's funny because since I spoke with you guys, I had been doing the rounds with the Irish National Radio, and his loss there is particularly felt because there is no American politician, and that would include Bill Clinton, who did great work on this matter, but there's no American politician who I think can receive more credit to help resolve what we call the troubles in Northern Ireland. And what's remarkable is that Teddy's first involvement in that kind of encapsulated, and his whole experience there encapsulated the Irish-American experience, because in 1971, his first policy statement on this was very, very, very brash and one-sided. He basically said, Brits out, and all the Protestants in Northern Ireland who don't like it should be afforded the opportunity to go back to the island of Britain. It was extremely one-sided, very naive, not very balanced, and not very realistic. And yet a year later in 1972, Teddy met with John Hume, the great pacifist Irish nationalist leader, and they became joined at the hip. They hit it off just personally very well. And for the next 30-odd years, Teddy really became the voice of reason on this. Now, he was the first one to speak out against British injustice in Northern Ireland and against policies he saw as counterproductive to bringing about peace and reconciliation on that island. But he also was vehemently opposed to the IRA's campaign of violence, which I think gets lost in the shuffle. If you recall, Teddy was just given an honorary knighthood. And a lot of right-wing British people, politicians and commentators, were really appalled by this and described him as the IRA's leading cheerleader in America, which is really, really not fair and not accurate.
Although, Kevin, it is fair to say that the Kennedy power in the United States was viewed by a lot of Irish nationalists who grew up naively as little boys and girls thinking that the Kennedys were going to do the Irish bidding. Teddy Kennedy turned out to be very different from that.
Yeah, but the other thing about that, the Irish bidding, it's almost like when you go into Israel, the idea that there is one thought among Israelis is dismissed immediately when you sit in a cafe, because there's four or five different points of view in Israel. Same thing as in Ireland. There's very many shades of what that you know, there are many people who believe in the United Ireland who don't believe spilling 1 ounce of blood over it, either from a moral position or the belief that it's just not realistic. You don't bring the Protestant Unionist people to a United Ireland by killing them. It just doesn't work that way. And most Irish people subscribe to that theory. But I think more than anything, it's classic Teddy. He got involved. And the other thing this brings up, and this is the one thing that I'm starting to hear across the country, is Ted Kennedy had probably the best congressional staff you can think of. If you go through Washington, it's almost like an all-star team. People that used to work for him have moved on to do other great things. The other theme that, you know, I think I've heard many people say, you know, he was the great Democratic liberal president that never was. I take a completely different view of that. And Teddy, and I spoke about this once in the hideaway, his little getaway in the Capitol. The idea, if he had won the presidency in 1980, by any stretch, his public life would have ended in 1988 after, let's say, had two terms.
That is true, yeah.
And if you go back, let's just date it from 1980.
He was just getting started in 1980.
Absolutely. He was coming into his own. He was maturing. And that's the other thing about Teddy, when people point to his personal foibles. Just think of what he went through in the 60s and even into the
watching his brothers die,
yeah,
the plane crash, sure.
And then being thrust forward probably a lot sooner than he should have been.
Well, Kevin, I know I could spend a whole day with you beginning every sentence with, and another thing about Teddy, that's for sure. Kevin Cullen, columnist for the Boston Globe. We're going to get a quick update now from Sean Corcoran, senior reporter at WCII in Cape Cod outside the Kennedy compound. Sean?
Hi, John.
So what's happening? I mean, we're expecting to hear from the president. The reactions are coming in from all over the world. I imagine neighbors there this morning are quietly observing a summer day.
It's a beautiful summer day. The boats, we can see them out there on the sound. The neighbors poking their heads out slowly but surely. A few have ventured down only to be quickly questioned by the media, and most just defer and say no. There's a group of children who are watching the assembled media, but mostly we're just waiting. We're waiting to see if anyone will come out and would like to make a few comments, or if we can find out about when some funeral arrangements are going to be. We're just waiting here.
And again, we have no details on funeral arrangements. You mentioned that you'd heard Ethel Kennedy had made it into the compound, but besides Ethel Kennedy, there hasn't been a convergence of the Klan at the compound there in Hyannisport.
No, not that we know of. Perhaps that happened before the media assembled here. We can't know that. All we've seen is very few cars. There was a caravan that went through that, you know, caused a stir among the media and some speculation about what was inside that van. But we don't know, and it's really not a coming and going situation. Even local folks are not really allowed down here right now. The police, who've handled the Kennedys for decades, have blocked off much of the area.
All right, Sean Corcoran, senior reporter for WCAI, public radio station on Cape Cod, who's standing by outside the Kennedy compound. We were also talking with Kevin Cullen, columnist of the Boston Globe, on the passing of Senator Edward Kennedy, who died last night at age 77.
John, we're just getting some news in from the White House, and they say that President Obama is due to speak at in about half an hour's time from now.
Half an hour's time.
A little bit later, we will be taking that live, if you're still with us. The president said earlier on this morning that Senator Kennedy was the greatest United States senator of our time. Also getting some other compliments in and some other plaudits in. Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney unsuccessfully ran against the senator in 1994. He says Kennedy was the kind of man you could like even if he was your adversary.
And certainly he made that his legacy in the Senate. Some of his best friends are Republicans. John McCain,
yes.
Orrin Hatch among them. We are, of course, asking for your recollections, positive and negative, about the passing of Senator Ted Kennedy. 877-8-MY-TAKE, mytake@thetakeaway.org. Jeff Zeleny on this program, reporter for The New York Times, was suggesting that at the very least, the health care reform bill, should it materialize, will be named after Ted Kennedy. Is symbolism more important than substance on this day? Let us know at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. I'm John Huckenberry.
And I'm Femi Oke. If you've missed any of our show this last hour, you can catch it at thetakeaway.org. This is The Takeaway. Edward M. Kennedy, the husband, father, grandfather, brother, and uncle we love so deeply, died late Tuesday night at home in Hyannisport. That statement was released this morning by the Kennedy family. 77-year-old Senator Kennedy died from brain cancer. As the youngest of Rose and Joseph Kennedy's nine children, it was Teddy who always delivered the eulogies. His most famous was for his brother Robert in 1968.
My brother need not be idealized or enlarged in death beyond what he was in life. To be remembered simply as a good and decent man, who saw wrong and tried to right it, saw suffering and tried to heal it, saw war and tried to stop it.
This morning, a eulogy for the youngest Kennedy, remembering the life and achievements of Senator Edward Kennedy on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, August the 26th. I'm Femi Oke, in this week with John Hockenberry. Morning, John.
Good morning. It's a somber morning, but lots to talk about this morning.
Absolutely. We will be talking about Ted Kennedy's legacy all this hour.
And we begin with Jeff Zeleny, reporter for The New York Times, who's on Martha's Vineyard awaiting remarks by President Barack Obama marking the death of Ted Kennedy. We expect in about a half an hour. Is it fair to say, Jeff Zeleny, and we'll talk more about this later on in the hour, that at the very least, the death of Ted Kennedy holds the potential of making the debate on health care more serious, more about actually fixing something rather than political posturing?
I think it's fair to say that the urgency of some type of health care reform, perhaps in the name and honor of Senator Kennedy, will be the renewed conversation when Congress begins debating this in September.
All right. Stay with us. Jeff Zeleny, reporter for The New York Times, with the president on Martha's Vineyard, awaiting his remarks on Ted Kennedy's passing. And Femi Oke has our other headlines this morning.
Fresh numbers from the manufacturing sector are just out this morning. Last month, orders for big-ticket factory goods posted the biggest spike in 2 years. Orders were up nearly 5%, and that is better than expected. Overseas, a powerful Iraqi Shiite leader is dead. Abdul Aziz al-Hakim died today while being treated for lung cancer. He was enormously influential in Iraq, with close ties to Iran.
So in the headlines, NASA's shuttle Discovery will have to wait until at least Friday to launch. Engineers scrubbed the launch again today. They're checking a fuel valve. The Food and Drug Administration has approved the emergency use of an H1N1 swine flu test for U.S. troops abroad. The military wants to speed up diagnosis and treatment as it prepares for an expected spike in cases. And I love this story. The Postal Service is offering employees a buyout, $15,000 if you'll quit.
I'm going to join tomorrow and and then quit on Friday.
That could add up to $500 million in savings at the Postal Service over the next 2 years. Markets moved up just a touch yesterday. The markets expected to be flat or possibly positive when they open in about a half hour from now. The Dow opens at 95.39. The S&P starts trading at 10.28. The NASDAQ at 20.24. We want to hear your memories of Ted Kennedy. He passed away last night. Give us your sense of the legacy of this most important senator, perhaps, in the 20th century. Some have said. You can call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or send us an email, mytake@thetakeaway.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
Good morning, everyone. John Hockenberry here with Femi Okay.
And hello there.
With such a long legacy as a senator, there's plenty to hear from Senator Kennedy's own mouth in looking back at his long, long career.
Yeah, of course.
But my favorite cut of the morning, I want to replay it again, is something that Teddy Kennedy's mom, Rose, said about him at one point. Listen to this.
When Teddy was about to come, everyone said, "You're crazy to have 9 children. You lose your figure, you lose your looks, it'll be disastrous." I said, "God be praised," and Teddy came into the world, how fortunately. Because the only son I have now.
Bittersweet. Rose Kennedy talking about her only son at that point. And, of course, Ted Kennedy went on to be perhaps the most famous of the Kennedys, at least in terms of an impact on public affairs and especially in Washington. Joining us now, Jeff Zeleny, New York Times reporter on Martha's Vineyard. We're awaiting live remarks from President Barack Obama, expected at 9:30. We will carry those live here on the program. Jeff Zeleny, what's the choice of Barack Obama today? Do you wear the Kennedy mantle and play the progressive from here on out, or do you quietly set to rest perhaps the last real progressive in the Democratic Party, at least a 20th century progressive?
I think what you do for President Obama is really honor and praise the legacy of Senator Kennedy today. You remember and you give thanks. There's no question that Senator Kennedy's endorsement of President Obama helped him considerably, really only a year and a half ago. So I think you sort of use his memory and use some of that urgency to help you with your agenda. But I think the role of the progressive is interesting. A lot of progressive Democrats were quite unhappy with Senator Kennedy when he joined forces with President George W. Bush to pass a No Child Left Behind education bill, which was roundly criticized. So I think there are many lessons that can be drawn from Senator Kennedy's long tenure of service on Capitol Hill. So perhaps President Obama will lean upon some of those as well and issue a new call for bipartisanship.
But I wonder if this is really the end of an era. I mean, certainly it's the end of the Kennedy dynasty. Those 9 Kennedys, the kids of Joe and Rose, are dead. But it seems to me the Democratic presidents we've elected have been all centrists. Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter to a certain extent. Barack Obama is acting much more like a centrist than he is like a progressive.
Yeah, there's no question. But I think during his presidential campaign, that is the candidate who Senator Kennedy endorsed. Really, if you listen to what then Senator Obama was saying during the presidential campaign, he did not campaign far from the left. Perhaps some Democrats saw that during the primary. You know, and of course he's moved a little bit to the center or even to the right since he's taken office. But his campaign message was always on sort of bringing parties and things together. So I think a lot of lessons can be learned from the Kennedys, you know, and it will be interesting to see how this president, who is a new era, a new generation of American politicians, responds to this.
And we anticipate that the president there on Martha's Vineyard will speak to the press live in about 20 minutes' time. Jeff Zeleny will be there. We'll be talking about his remarks after he speaks. Jeff Zeleny, reporter with The New York Times. Thank you so much, Jeff.
Thank you.
So we want to welcome back to the program Kenneth Feinberg, who was formerly appointed special master of the U.S. government's September 11th Victim Compensation Fund. You may know him as that. He's now the Obama administration's pay czar, working on compensation details for the bank bailout program. But Kenneth Feinberg was once a former chief of staff for Edward Kennedy. Good morning, Kenneth.
Good morning.
You know, it was said earlier on the program by Kevin Cullen of the Boston Globe that the young people who went through Teddy Kennedy's office were the happiest on the Hill, the hardest working, and thought that it was the best staff in Washington, D.C. Now, was it as happy a shop as they report?
Oh, I think it was a very, very rewarding and happy opportunity because you were working with a man who was a whirling dervish that wanted to take on and tackle as many issues as he could and get something done, have an impact, not simply be an elected official, sort of a sabbatical. He really worked at it.
So you had these competing tensions of the presidential run, his criticism of Jimmy Carter, and also his legislative work.
No, it was wonderful because if he was going to run for president, he was going to run on a legislative record. And that meant that during the 1970s, when I worked there, we were working on multiple issues, scores of issues, all at one time with a very, very able group working with him. And it was just a very exciting time.
And what did you make of this moment back in 1980 when he was asked famously by Roger Mudd his reasons for running for president?
I don't make much of it one way or the other. I think his overall legislative record towers above probably any other senator in American history.
Well, not to be critical, but let me play that moment. And, you know, because I imagine your context for it is very, very different than the rest of us. Here's Edward M. Kennedy answering a question from CBS reporter Roger Mudd about his reasons for running for president back in 1980.
Why do you want to be president?
Well, I'm... were I to... to make the announcement and to run, the reasons that I would run is because I have a great belief in this country that it is, has more natural resources than any nation of the world, has the greatest educated population in the world, the greatest technology of any country in the world, the greatest capacity for innovation in the world, and the greatest political system in the world.
Ken Feinberg, that played as ambivalence in the public record, but you know, what was it like being on Kennedy's staff during that moment?
There was no ambivalence. Everybody moved on. You dust yourself off, and there were issues in Judiciary Committee and Labor and Human Resources Committee and Armed Services Committee. I mean, he just looked straight ahead and kept going with a determination to implement a public policy agenda.
Ken Feinberg, former chief of staff for Senator Kennedy. This is Femi Okey just jumping into the conversation. When I look at Senator Edward Kennedy, I feel like I know him. I feel like he's like my big uncle. But in terms of you working with him very closely, was there a difference between the public persona and the private persona?
No, there wasn't. What you saw was the man, publicly and privately, determined to get something done, to use his fame and his bully pulpit to try and really have an impact on the laws of the country. And he could be a hard taskmaster. He could be very demanding and want results. But working for him, you went home at night knowing that you were really helping accomplish something that would have an impact all over the country.
Do you remember a time he called you on the carpet?
He called me on the carpet many times, but always with a good humor and with a desire, a constructive desire to get things done. And clearly everybody in Washington just loved the opportunity to receive an offer to work for Senator Kennedy because you knew that working for him, you would have a chance to influence the public policy of the country.
Kenneth, there's lots of hand-wringing right now saying, I wish that Senator Kennedy was more involved in the healthcare debate. He had that ability to cross the aisle. When he was doing that, when you were his chief of staff, what was the magic that he actually managed to spin?
He realized, and he would realize it today if he were involved in the healthcare debate, that the perfect is the enemy of the good. He knew that if you could get half a loaf or three quarters of a loaf this time around and get the foundation built, for example, with a health care proposal, that the other objectives, the other aspirational objectives you seek will be next year or the year after. He was in this for the long haul, and he knew that you secured success through increments. And that was his lasting legislative methodology, that stick around, do your homework, get as much as you can, be willing to compromise, and in the long run, you'll get what you want.
Well, the newest breed of senators maybe aren't as into those increments as they are into the bully pulpit. The lessons worth considering. Kenneth Feinberg, thanks so much for being with us. Former chief of staff for Edward Kennedy in the 70s until 1980, his failed run for the presidency, but it set up the legacy of Edward Kennedy as an indefatigable compromiser and legislator. We're remembering Ted Kennedy all morning long. We want to hear your memories. 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. Positive and negative.
You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everyone. John Hockenberry here with Femi Okay. And, you know, it's hard to believe. This show had just gone on the air when Senator Kennedy was diagnosed with brain cancer May of 2008. It's called a malignant glioma.
Okay.
And there's no better reminder of the severity of this disease and the, you know, the swiftness with which it can bring someone down, than to note that Kennedy was diagnosed just a year ago. Joining us to talk about the medical implications of Kennedy's passing, he died last night at age 77, is Dr. Eugene Flam, head of the Department of Neurosurgery at Montefiore Medical Center in New York City. Good morning, Dr. Flam.
Good morning.
And Dr. Sherwin Newland, of course, a surgeon, professor of bioethics and medicine at Yale University School of Medicine, and the author of several best-selling books, including How We Die, Reflections on Life's Final Chapter. Dr. Newland, thanks. Nice to talk to you again.
Thank you.
So, first of all, Dr. Eugene Flam, is the quickness with which the death or the diagnosis was followed by the death barely a year later, does that surprise you at all?
Not really. Unfortunately, this tumor, the median survival is about a year, 14 months, which puts Senator Kennedy exactly in that range. Occasionally, someone will go on for about 2 years or maybe even longer, but it's quite unusual. It's a very rapid tumor.
And Kennedy famously had surgery, even though it was suggested that maybe he wouldn't have surgery early on after the diagnosis. And, of course, the Kennedys can have any sort of health care that they want. What sort of operation do you think that was, and how would we gauge its success?
Well, the number that I gave of a year to a year and a half is with treatment. If one were to do no treatment at all, patients do not survive even that long. So this is not care that anyone could not get. I mean, this is the kind of treatment that is available to anyone with this tumor at any of our medical centers.
Dr. Flam, Femi Okay here. I'm just looking at Senator Kennedy's piece in Newsweek that was out a little while ago, and he talks about wanting universal health care in the States so that one day when there is a cure for the disease I now have, no American who needs it will also get the same kind of care. How far away are we from a cure for the kind of cancer that actually killed Senator Kennedy?
Ooh, that's a very difficult question. How far away? I mean, there's obviously work has gone on for all cancer, and especially in the field that I work in for gliomas for a long, long time. It's just been a very difficult problem to get under control. I wouldn't even hazard a guess of picking a year for that one.
Right. Well, you'd make news if your prediction came true, that's for sure. Dr. Sherwin Nuland, what are the issues for someone who basically, we understand today, knew he was dying the moment basically he was diagnosed? Here's somebody who was as active as you could be, lived a very, very full life, was wedded to the notion of his being powerful both in the Senate and in his family. What are the issues for someone who is in essentially a steep decline over a period as short as a year?
Well, probably Dr. Flam might be able to speak better to that issue having to do with the symptomatic changes in a person with glioma. But I would suspect that there would be paralysis depending on where the glioma is. There would certainly be the emotional issue, which to me has always been the most important one of recognizing, and I'm sure his doctors were very frank with him, recognizing that he probably had just about a year or 14 months to live and so much work left undone, not to mention the simple issue of facing death and non-existence.
Well, Dr. Nuland, the emotional issue is what I want to focus on here. I mean, how do you decide to shed these things that have been so important in your life, knowing that you have a year to live and things have to start going?
Well, famously, we talk about the five stages, which include at first the impossible, the denial, the impossibility of believing such a thing is true, and then the anger, why me, and then finally the resolution that death is coming and one can do nothing about it, and one just simply begins to understand what is happening finally. And of course, I haven't, in my experience of 40 years or so, seen these stages ever act themselves out. One sees parts of them, but I would think someone with what I consider the great intellectual maturity of Senator Kennedy would have long reconciled himself to what his body and what his mind are going through and reconciled himself to the inevitability that his work would remain unfinished. My guess is that there will be papers left that he has worked on over the years, messages perhaps that he has left to the world, certainly to the country. Some of them will definitely have to do with universal health care for this nation.
Is there a temptation for someone as powerful and famous as Kennedy to rage against the dying of the light?
I can't believe that there was no period when he raged against the dying of the light. But I would guess that was very early on, after the diagnosis was made and perhaps after the operation, when the extent of his disease had been told to him.
Dr. Sherwin Nuland, thanks so much. Surgeon, professor of bioethics and medicine at Yale University School of Medicine, author of several books, including How We Die, Reflections on Life's Final Chapter, the final chapter, of course, of Senator Edward Kennedy, came to pass last night. Dr. Eugene Flam, head of the Department of Neurosurgery at Montefiore Medical Center in New York City, final thoughts on the sort of issue of malignant glioma, which brought down Senator Kennedy?
In addition to treating it, one has to always, as you brought up just before, remember the importance of keeping the quality of one's brain intact during the course of the treatment. And that's often what limits our ability to treat this. I think in Senator Kennedy's situation, his functioning was extended as long as it possibly could, and that's to the credit of everyone involved.
And he did show up in the Senate in January, as he pledged at the Democratic National Convention in August of last year. Dr. Eugene Flam, head of the Department of Neurosurgery at Montefiore Medical Center in New York City, from a medical perspective, remembering Senator Edward M. Kennedy, who died at age 77. That was a great moment when he showed up at that convention. Do you remember?
It was. Yeah. I got tingles. It was really, really special. We are waiting this hour for President Obama to actually speak on his vacation at Martha's Vineyard about Senator Ted Kennedy. He got the news of the senator's death around about 2 a.m. this morning. That's according to Jeff Zeleny at the New York Times. Let's take a quick look at some other news happening today. The FDA is giving the military the go-ahead for emergency use of a test for H1N1, also known as swine flu. The military wants to speed up diagnosis and treatment. New cash for clunkers numbers are out. Car dealers has submitted some 665,000 vouchers for cash for clunker trade-ins, and that totals nearly $2.8 billion. As a look at some of today's news, we are talking about the legacy of Senator Ted Kennedy. We want to hear from you too. 1-877-8-MY-TAKE. Email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
Femi OK and John Hockenberry with you this morning. We've been talking all morning about the legacy of Senator Ted Kennedy. He died last night in Massachusetts in Hyannis Port, and he died at the age of 77 from complications from his brain tumour. So we've been asking many of our guests this morning to talk about his legacy, and you've also been weighing in as well.
Bonnie Brooke Davis, Tacoma, Washington. Ted Kennedy will go down as one of the greatest senators of all time. He was a wonderful, wonderful personality. He cared deeply about the American people and all people.
You don't only are able to call us, you can call us on 1-877-8-MY-TAKE or send us an email, mytake@thetakeaway.org. We like hearing from you about Senator Ted Kennedy.
Hi, my name is David Greenbaum. I'm calling from New York, but I am originally from Massachusetts, and I voted for the senator a number of times. I want to express my condolences to the Kennedy family. One of the things I appreciated about Senator Kennedy was not just the health insurance bill, which I hope will pass after his pass, but his friendship for the state of Israel. I hope that President Obama will remember Senator Kennedy's friendship for the state of Israel.
Well, we're awaiting President Obama to actually speak in reaction to Senator Kennedy's death last night at the age of 77. You, of course, can weigh in at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. We'll go live to the president's remarks from Martha's Vineyard when they happen. But joining us now is John Broder from The New York Times, who wrote the big piece on Senator Kennedy in The New York Times this morning. He comes back to the program speaking to us from Washington. John, you know, as thoughts begin to crystallize in the aftermath of what was in the beginning of the morning a very somber event, and now I think seems to be more of a politically calculated event, not to be cynical about it, what's the moment here for the Democrats like Barack Obama to wear the mantle of Senator Ted Kennedy, or to quietly put to rest the progressive sort of voice of the Democratic Party?
Well, I think there are combinations of both of those things, but I think the immediate tactical goal, and I don't want to be too cynical about it either, is to use this moment of national unity and mourning of even his opponents considered him, you know, a great public servant, to use this moment to perhaps rally some support around health care, which Kennedy himself referred to as the cause of my life. And he had been present at the creation of all the major health care programs since he began serving in the Senate in the early 60s. Longer term, I think that the country and the Senate has lost one of its great liberal voices. But he was always somebody who was willing to work across the aisle, and I hope that, and I expect that President Obama will use this as a moment to ask Republicans, in memory and tribute to Senator Kennedy, to work with him on health care.
But is it asking for a favor, or is it something with some political clout? Nick Lemon was on the program earlier, dean of Columbia Journalism School, talking about Kennedy's legacy as being really a voice almost from the Truman administration through the Johnson administration, and that since then it's really been centrists that have ruled the Democratic Party. Although Lemon said that he believed that Obama would be second only to Johnson in his ability to get social legislation passed, it's difficult to see the kind of radical change that we had in the 1960s coming from Barack Obama at this point.
Well, I think that's right, and I think that would be inconsistent with the platform that he ran on. I think he ran on a fairly centrist platform with rather ambitious progressive goals, but we've seen them both on energy and health care this year whittled down to something much closer to the Senate, and he seems to be fighting a battle within his own party to try and get those two major pieces of legislation through. And he will miss Kennedy because of Kennedy's ability to work, you know, with both centrist members of the Democratic Party and some Republicans.
You know, also because you're such a big thinker, Broder, I want to ask you this as well. You know, thinking back to 1980, right, Kennedy was going to challenge Jimmy Carter, right?
Right.
And Jimmy Carter, of course, was something of a new Democrat back in 1976, defeating Gerald Ford after the Watergate years. You know, we all sort of thought that in 1980, when Kennedy failed to really challenge Jimmy Carter and his campaign went awry, that it was all about Kennedy's own personal failings. But maybe it will be seen, you know, as we get farther from this moment of Senator Kennedy's passing, as really the last moment of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party really having the sort of central clout in the party, and that it's really moved on.
Well, I think that's a debate that historians have had for three decades now and will have for many decades more. You know, remember who won that election in 1980? It was Ronald Reagan. It was not the
right.
New Democrat.
Right, exactly.
So the country had moved considerably to the right. Kennedy was seen as both out of touch with his own party at that moment and still as a deeply flawed personal character. He also ran quite a terrible campaign.
John Broder from the New York Times, you have a front page story on the New York Times this morning. You end that piece by saying that Senator Kennedy will be the most significant of all of the Kennedys. Why do you say that?
Well, he obviously failed to achieve the presidency, but historians give John F. Kennedy mixed grades as president. The American public, by contrast, considers him one of the two or three or four greatest presidents. But I think they're remembering the promise rather than actually what President Kennedy delivered. Historians have a much more nuanced and less charitable view of what John F. Kennedy achieved. But by sheer perseverance, doggedness, longevity, Edward Kennedy left his mark across the entire landscape of American policy, both domestic and to a somewhat
Indeed.
Lesser extent, but importantly on foreign policy as well.
You know, it's a kind of a double helix. I mean, when I grew up, Teddy Kennedy was kind of a buffoon. John F. Kennedy was almost a god. And yet, as my sort of adult life has proceeded, it's JFK who's been toppled from the pedestal, and Teddy Kennedy, who has slowly grown in stature. It's an interesting irony, don't you think?
I think so, too. And that's what makes his life so interesting and the whole Kennedy family legacy. And, of course, you know, people today are still thinking, what if John F. Kennedy Jr. had survived? I just saw his face flash across the CNN that I have on here in my office. And he was such an appealing character, so handsome and full of promise. And he, too, like his father, is frozen in amber for what might have been.
Indeed. John Broder.
And Teddy was what was.
Yes, indeed. Exactly.
And with all his flaws, it was a great life and a great series of accomplishments.
Very well said. John Broder, New York Times reporter, wrote the big piece in the Times on Kennedy, speaking with us about the passing of Senator Edward Kennedy, who died after a year-long battle with brain cancer at age 77. It's amazing, the sort of dual rise and fall of JFK and Teddy.
I love that takeaway. Teddy was what was.
Yes, indeed.
Love that.
Exactly.
We are talking about the legacy of Senator Edward Kennedy. He died yesterday after a year-long battle with a brain tumor and brain cancer. We got that news, or President Obama got that news at 2 a.m. earlier on this morning. We are waiting for him to speak from his vacation spot of Martha's Vineyard to talk about Senator Edward Kennedy. You can do the same, 1-877-8-MY-TAKE, mytake@thetakeaway.org. You're listening to The Takeaway. This is The Takeaway. I'm Femi Okay.
And I'm John Hockenberry. We've been talking all morning about how Senator Ted Kennedy died last night, age 77. He passed away at his home in Hyannisport. And, you know, wouldn't you know, Teddy Kennedy would have his own best tagline.
Together we have known success and seen setbacks, victory and defeat. But we have never lost our belief that we are all called to a better country and a newer world.
Success, setbacks, victory, and defeat. Ted Kennedy had all of those in spades. That was him speaking last August at the Democratic National Convention after his diagnosis with brain cancer. He leaves in his wake an incredible legacy on politics and the nation.
And you've also been talking about your remembrances of Senator Edward Kennedy.
I just remember this guy as being, the times I've met him, as just being a good, normal guy. More than any regular politician, just a genuinely good guy.
Now, Ted was a sibling who for
the
years...
The youngest of nine.
Oh, nine. Okay, yes, yes, of
like
course.
The little guy.
Joseph and Rose and their nine children. Ted was the youngest one. And it was Ted who gave the eulogies for the rest of the family.
My brother need not be idealized or enlarged in death beyond what he was in life. To be remembered simply as a good and decent man who saw wrong and tried to right it, saw suffering and tried to heal it, saw war and tried to stop it.
That hitch in his voice there when he's eulogizing his dead brother, Robert Kennedy, back in 1968 after an assassin's bullet took his life. But now it's the world's turn to memorialize Ted Kennedy.
It's a real loss to the American people. It is also a...
My dear friend, I love you. And I miss you.
He embodied the liberal New England tradition and everything I love about Boston. God rest his soul.
So you've been listening there to Israeli President Shimon Peres. That was this
voice.
Morning.
Yeah.
Senator Robert Byrd, he broke down last year.
That was right after the cancer diagnosis.
When he heard about the brain tumor. Yeah. And former Senator Bob Graham and President Jimmy Carter all this morning. And, of course, our listener Dana as well.
Now, Ted Kennedy will be remembered forever for his legacy and his impact. But some of you will also remember him for what he was at his worst. And, of course, for those who remember the negatives of Ted Kennedy, Chappaquiddick.
I remember Ted Kennedy for getting away with a vehicular homicide of the Chappaquiddick affair and waiting 10 hours to report the crime. He can have all kinds of political legacies, but none will be greater than that.
And that Chappaquiddick incident happened almost exactly 40 years ago this year.
It's extraordinary. Also on our website, thetakeaway.org, a number of our listeners are weighing in on that particular incident and said he only got away with it because he was wealthy.
Well, the Kennedy legacy and the Teddy Kennedy legacy is important because it is so complex, and that's why we've had so much to talk about this morning. He wasn't a flawless individual, but today we want to remember who he was and what he meant to us in his later years as a legislator.
Before the war, week after week after week after week, we were told lie after lie after lie after lie.
It was in this chamber a number of years ago that we knocked down the great walls of discrimination on the basis of race, that we knocked down the walls of discrimination on the basis of religion. Here in the Senate, we were part of the March for Progress, and today we are called on again.
We will elect him as our next President of the United States, Barack Obama!
You're listening to The Takeaway from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Hello again, Femi Oke here with John Hockenberry. All of this morning we've been covering Senator Ted Kennedy's life and lasting legacy. But now we're going to take a break from that for a moment to take a look at some of today's other news. A new report out just this morning shows that orders for big ticket factory goods are up by the largest amount in 2 years. That is good news for manufacturers. So-called durable goods orders jumped 4.9%, and that is better than expected. A powerful Iraqi Shiite leader is dead. Abdul Aziz al-Hakim died today while being treated for lung cancer. He had close ties to the US and Iran. The FDA is giving the military emergency approval to use a test for H1N1 or swine flu on US troops deployed overseas. The Defense Department plans to use the test on combat units in the Middle East and also those on Navy ships. The cash-strapped Postal Service is offering employees $15,000 to pack up and ship themselves out. The agency is offering buyouts to employees. It hopes to save $500 million over 2 years. And finally, Michael Vick will take to the field for the Philadelphia Eagles tomorrow in a preseason game. Here's his coach, Andy Reid.
I'm sure he'll have a couple butterflies with it being a couple years since he's been in, but... I think he's excited to get back to doing what he does.
Vic is out of practice because of something else he did. Now, do I need to go through it? The dog fighting, the baiting, etc. But he recently completed a sentence for running a dog fighting ring. And those are some of the top stories we've been watching today.
And, of course, the story that's dominated our conversation this morning is the passing of Senator Edward Kennedy last night at age 77 after more than a year-long struggle with brain cancer. He passed away at his home in Hyannisport, Massachusetts. We were expecting, the White House promised all morning, that there would be live remarks from President Barack Obama. We may yet get them between now and the end of the program. But should we do that, we will go live. But for now, let's continue our conversation with John Broder of The New York Times, who wrote the large, a biographical piece in the New York Times that's on the stands this morning. And also Emily Rooney from WGBH, our partner. She's the host of the news show Greater Boston and also hosts the weekly media criticism show Beat the Press. Emily Rooney, you followed the career of Teddy Kennedy both as a voter of his and as a journalist there in Massachusetts. Your thoughts this morning?
You know, it's sort of hard sometimes to separate the two when you feel like you know somebody well. Yeah, he was in our – always sort of there journalistically. He was great news fodder. But so many of us in the news media got to know Ted Kennedy well because he was around for so long. I have a lot of personal memories of him, frankly, and one of them is very personal. My own husband died in the summer of 1997, and he showed up just totally unexpectedly. I was in shock. He showed up at the hospital room where my entire family had gathered. My father and mother and my twin sister, my brother was there. Ted Kennedy showed up. He had on a blue blazer and mixed up socks and shoes. And I remember my father making a comment about that. But he described my husband in a crowd of reporters. He says, Kirby would stand in the back and bob and weave and move around to get the best angle and to shout questions from him, which said to me, Ted Kennedy was as observant as any news reporter that you could imagine. I would never even have imagined in a million years that he would have sort of been able to pick my husband out of a crowd. Not only that, he described him to a T.
He always had a reputation for being a great politician and a great sort of person who pressed the flesh well. But when did he go from being someone who was known as not a good manager of his campaign to someone who was really a seasoned observer of those kinds of details and someone who really managed his message?
When he married Vicky in 1992.
Yeah, others have said
it
that.
It all changed. Everything changed. The hard drinking, obviously the womanizing. He really became – that was when he made that leap into, you know, the lion of the Senate. I mean, he was heading in that direction anyway, but that changed him personally and professionally.
John Broder, final thoughts. We're expecting to go to the president in a couple of minutes, but, you know, you never know with this White House.
Well, I guess I would circle back to what we had been talking about before, about what he leaves behind in terms of a legislative legacy on civil rights, on voting rights, on health care legislation, on immigration legislation. He, unlike his brothers, lived out, you know, a full life and has a lot to show for it. And that I think, will be how he will be remembered.
All right. And Emily, do you think the people of Boston will be able to imagine someone to fill Ted Kennedy's shoes in that Senate seat? I remember when Ted Kennedy had to fill John Kennedy's shoes, taking over his brother's Senate seat when he went on to the presidency. That seemed like big shoes to fill. But it's much bigger now.
When you think about it, since the for decades, since the 40s and 50s, there has been a Kennedy that was a presence in a major way in the lives of all Bostonians, everybody in Massachusetts. So the idea that there isn't a Kennedy to step forward, I mean, there could be, but it looks very unlikely that any of the Kennedys, Joe Jr. or not Joe Jr., but Joseph Jr., the son of Robert F., would step in. It doesn't look like any of those people will, but it's going to be hard to imagine not having a Kennedy, frankly, in the Senate.
Who's going to carry
in Congress?
There's the Kennedy torch. There's the progressive torch in the Democratic Party. Mr. Hillary Shelton, director of the NAACP Washington Bureau, on the line with us from Washington, D.C. Who's carrying the torch now that Teddy Kennedy is gone?
I think we're still grasping to find out who that will be. There are a number of great leaders that have provided a great opportunity to move us forward in the country on key issues that Kennedy supported, like health care and civil rights and human rights concerns. Certainly we'll be looking to even his junior Senator John Kerry as someone to help move that mantle forward, along with certainly even Chris Dodd is struggling right now with his own cancer, but hopefully coming back very, very soon to help provide some leadership for us. So we'll be looking for someone to step up to that mantle. And as you mentioned, they're tremendously huge shoes to fill.
Yeah.
His contributions were in many ways immeasurable.
You know, historian Alicia Rose up at Brown University was saying that part of Kennedy's legacy is that he created, particularly on civil rights, the mechanisms for people to assert their own rights. Is that your view?
Absolutely. He's someone that was so hands-on in crafting a very populist-driven strategy. I can remember many times coming to Capitol Hill on the weekend because Senator Kennedy was ready to work. He knew he couldn't waste any time and that very well the opposition to our civil rights concerns would not sleep, and neither could we.
You would have to come in on the weekend?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, it was not extraordinary to go to Capitol Hill, to the Russell Senate Office Building, to see he, his wife, and his dogs running through the hall as we were on our way into a conference room to meet, to plan, and prepare for the next week's legislative activities on the Senate side.
And I imagine you had to be involved in some stakeouts, Emily, on the weekends as well, eh?
You know, I can remember being in his office once. You talk about being a fighter for civil rights in this country, really for the world, where he was meeting with people from the international refugee agencies around the world. I mean, he really cared about the plight of people all over the world. And people came to him, talking about the weekends, whenever he had a free time, he would open up his doors to people like that.
All right. Those are great, great stories. And I imagine people in Boston and in Washington, Hillary Shelton, are telling these stories all day today, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's no one in this city that's actively engaged in the congressional process that doesn't have at least one Kennedy story to tell.
At least one, maybe two, three, or four. Well, Hillary Shelton is director of the NAACP's Washington Bureau. He joined us from Washington, D.C. Emily Rooney from WGBH, our partners in Boston, the host of the news show Greater Boston and the weekly media criticism show Beat the Press. Final thought, Emily?
I was remembering just last summer at the Democratic National Convention, I was on the floor working my way to the Massachusetts delegation. I've been to every convention since 1976. I've never seen anything like this, the shoulder to shoulder, the people squeezing. I get myself finally situated into the delegation, and I'm staring at the faces of the people there. And everybody is just streaming with tears, gawking and looking forward and taking in this incredible emotional moment, thinking, this is the last time we are ever going to see him. Of course, that ended up not being true because that was in July. He had been diagnosed just 3 months earlier. Here it is a year later. But that was, I think in some respects, they knew it was the last time they were going to hear him speak like that so forcefully, so poignantly, and nominating the candidate or being part of the nomination process of the candidate that he had endorsed.
Memories of Emily Rooney of WGBH in Boston. Memories for us all. We're talking about Senator Ted Kennedy today. He passed away last night at the age of 77. Thank you, Emily.
We continue our coverage of the legacy, the life, and achievements of Senator Edward Kennedy online at thetakeaway.org. Please go there. We will also be covering President Obama's speech online at thetakeaway.org. I'm Femi Okeh.
And I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks for joining us this morning. This is The Takeaway. You know, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday. Thanks for listening. If you have any feedback or think there's any stories we should be covering on The Takeaway, contact us at 1-877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. See ya.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.